Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathleen O., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, June 24th, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 35, the second paragraph. Our first example is a friend, and we'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Denise H. will be reading the 12 Steps, Teresa S. will be reading the 12 Traditions, and the readers of our text are Leslie M., Carrie S., and Sandy W. The share ID for Sunday, June 23rd, the special edition, is 13,068. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 13,071. That's 13071. Our newcomer greeter for today is Ramona A., and Reggie O. will be making the announcement. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Denise H. to read the 12 steps, please.
Good morning. This is Denise H. in East Tennessee. Okay, here are the 12 steps as adapted for Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
And thank you, Denise H. Teresa S., would you read the 12 traditions, please?
Good morning. This is Teresa S. from Bismarck. I am a compulsive overeater. These 12 traditions are to the groups what the 12 steps are to the individual. They are suggested principles to ensure the survival and growth of the many groups that compose Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Number three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Number four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Number five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Number six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Number seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Number eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Number nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Number 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Number 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. Number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
And thank you, Teresa S. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 35, the second paragraph that starts with our first example is a friend, and we'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. And Leslie M., if you could get us started, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Kathleen O., for your service. My name is Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He is a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is an intelligent man, normal so far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. Could everyone please mute? Thank you. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. As I said, my name is Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. And what this paragraph is talking to me about is that it doesn't matter the things that I've accomplished in my life. It doesn't matter the things that I have. Or I could have everything wonderful in my life, or I could have everything horrible in my life. I have to had to concede to myself fully that I was a compulsive overeater. And the way that I can tell that I'm a compulsive overeater is that I have the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And without that total surrender, there was, there was no self-knowledge. There was nothing that was going to do anything to change me. In this example, you know, Jim is leaving the asylum because he's become so violent when drinking. I didn't ever get to that point. I was never in an asylum, but I was certainly in an asylum of my own making. I was in isolation because all I wanted was the food. The food was the only thing that mattered to me. And until I had that final surrender, and for me, that final surrender was about being not only being powerless over the food, but being powerless over my thinking. Because my thinking, the mental obsession, is, you know, was the greater part of my illness. And I had to see that I was as powerless over that that's what took me back to the food many times. And when I could finally surrender to that and surrender to a power greater than myself, I could find the solution that is written about it so masterly in the pages of this book. And thank you, everyone, for their service this morning. I pass.
And thank you, Leslie M. All right, so we're on page 35, the second paragraph. Our first example is a friend. And who else would like to share on that paragraph?
Hi, this is Maureen.
Lisa J.R.
Leah S.
Hi.
Julie I.
Okay, hold on.
Nina
hold on
L.
one. Hold on 1 second. Okay. I heard Maureen. Excuse me, Lisa J.R., Julie. Who else was in there?
Leah S. Irene. Hannah.
Who did
L.
I miss? Was that Jenna L?
Hannah L. With an H.
Hannah? Oh,
yeah.
Hannah L. Okay. Okay, let's stop there. And I missed a lot of initials of your last name, so you'll have to give me that. So I have Maureen, Lisa J.R., Leah S., Julie, Irene, and Hannah L. So go ahead, Maureen.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank Maureen S., gratefully recovering in New York. This paragraph pretty much sums up a lot for me because they talk about, so he has, this gym gentleman has all like the worldly successful things. A charming wife and a great family. So obviously he's wealthy because he inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He's a war hero. He is a great hero. He's also great at what he does. He's a great salesman and everybody loves him. He's smart and normal. That's just like the epitome of like, okay, the world says that that's a success, but that doesn't matter for my illness. All these things, I can have the best family, the best money, the best house, the best job, the best career. It doesn't change that I have a physical allergy and I have this illness. It's such a good reminder so I don't fall into that trap, into thinking, oh, okay, especially the trap for me is losing weight. So only that one tiny little part of recovery means nothing, nothing, because the other part of our recovery is so much more important for me. And I really, really, really need to tell myself that every day. I'm finding, too, the more I pour into my recovery, the stronger I am. It's amazing, like, the correlation between if I don't listen to a meeting, if I don't make an outreach call, if I don't do my reading, there's a direct correlation to my mental status. And without even picking up, I just hit my 1 month of abstinence yesterday, and I can tell a clear difference on days when I'm doing everything that I need to do. I need to go to a meeting. I need to contact my sponsor. I need to follow my food plan. I need to pour into my recovery 10 times what I used to pour into my disease, at least 10 times of it. And it's wonderful, and it's worth every single second. And I love this paragraph because it doesn't matter how much money I have. It doesn't matter how thin I am. It doesn't matter how great the job is going. None of that stuff matters. It doesn't change anything. It doesn't change a single thing. I'm always going to be a compulsive eater, and that's okay. I'm really grateful for all the lessons that have nothing to do with food in the 12 steps and in this recovery and in this community. It's so much more than that. So much more than that. It's peace, and it's my inner tranquility, and it's surrendering to my higher power. When I was in the food was my God. I didn't need God. I didn't need prayer. I would have told you I was a person of faith. I would have told someone, oh, yeah, you know, I'm really close to my God. I would have told you that, but it wasn't true, because whenever life got difficult, which is going to happen, that's the nature of being a human being. Life gets hard. Like, it's easy. We have hard days. We have easy days. But it doesn't change anything. I still have this disease of compulsive overeating. And I'm so grateful for this past month because some of the days have been really good and relatively easy. And other days I've struggled and, like, kind of white-knuckled it. Yes, and I'm still abstinent, and none of that matters. And so thank you so much for letting me share. I'll pass.
And thank you, Maureen S. Lisa J.R., you're up next, followed by Leah S.
Good morning, everybody. Lisa J.R. here, very gratefully recovered today.
One day at a time forever. Wow, this paragraph is so meaningful to me. You know, this disease takes no prisoners. You know, we die from it eventually, one way or another. So for me, you know, I have a precious, lucky enough to have my mom with me. She's 90 years old. And, you know, the asylum, it jumps out at me and really stirs me every time I read it. My grandfather, her father, died in an asylum. And for many years, for 80 years, my mother struggled with the idea that we had mental illness in our family, that her father died from, you know, schizophrenia or something. And she was always waiting for the shoe to drop. And I did some research for her many years too late to find out that my grandfather died in an asylum of alcoholic dementia in a particular place in Seattle that no longer exists, that was a specific hospital for people that had alcoholic dementia. So, you know, I know self-knowledge, you know, I went down that road for years. Why? What's wrong with me? How am I going to fix this on my own? And it didn't matter. I had to just put the plug in the jug and be willing, honest, and open-minded. For years, I waffled around trying to opt out because I was terminally unique, don't you know? And that didn't work. And now, and it's really amazing because I've gone back to a sister fellowship, ACOA, and I can look at, you know, I can look at my childhood in a different way now that I've put the plug in the jug. The insanity of being in the food blinded me, and nothing made the 2 foot drop. I could intellectualize it all, but it just didn't make the 2 foot drop to my heart until I actually put the plug in the jug and worked the steps. And I'm so grateful for all of you for helping me do that. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Leah S., you're up next, followed by Julie, I think it's I, but go ahead, Leah.
Thank you so much. This is Leah S., recovered and grateful in Brooklyn. So I'm just reading here. I'm just going to read this sentence again. He's an intelligent man, normal so far, as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. Okay, then they use the words asylum. They use the word. Thank you, God. I never was in an asylum, but I can very easily understand what it means to be in an asylum, because this disease has really taken a hold of me, and until I really came into these rooms and understood what is humaneness versus soundness of mind, and what is facing myself every single day. It's not easy, especially when I know what I am capable of. But I cannot outrun who I am. I always take Leah with me. I simply need to ask God to help me with the Leah that I would like to be. And I never really leave this program. I am doing what I do imperfectly, but I am a compulsive overeater. And I admit and I face that today. Today I want more serenity than I had yesterday. And today I want more clarity than I had yesterday. And today I want direction, I want guidance, and true kindness from you, dear God, so that I do everything for your sake, and I will start with my food. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
And thank you, Leah S. And Julie, you're up next, followed by Irene B. Go ahead, Julie.
Hi, this is Julie I. in Dallas, Texas. What comes up for me when I read this is that Jim
seemingly has all of this good fortune. He's successful, he has a good family, he's intelligent, everyone likes him. And yet he still has this problem with drinking that he can't control by himself. And I think for so many years, what kept me in the food and what kept me from getting help was just so much shame and denial and berating of myself. I was actually having a conversation with another fellow yesterday who was struggling, and she was just commenting and, you know, just feeling frustrated, like this is, to her, this is such a first world problem, this problem with eating, and, you know, just couldn't really even accept that she was having to deal with it given her good fortune in her life. And I think I had a lot of the same attitudes, just, you know, I should be able to handle this on my own. You know, I've got so many good things in my life. I've had so much privilege, you know, and yet I still can't manage this. And so it would just drive me further into isolation and despair and self-hatred. And, you know, and today, I think since I really surrendered to that and acknowledged that this is just my particular wiring, you know, I don't know why I have this disease, but I've always had it, and just acceptance of that and having compassion for myself, and allowing God to, and allowing myself to accept God's compassion and other people's compassion, and just accept my own humanity, has been such a tremendous gift. I'm so grateful for the 12 steps and really for this disease, for creating a window to God, for really bringing me to humility and to surrender, because it's just been so incredibly healing for me. And really it's through this process that I've been able to fully accept the gifts in my life, to be living in a place of gratitude. When before I was in the food, I couldn't enjoy those gifts. I couldn't be in the space of gratitude because I had so much self-pity and despair and self-hatred. And so it's just been a tremendous gift to be able to live in and by the steps. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Julie I. Irene B., you're up next, followed by Hannah L.
Good morning, everybody. I am Irene B., a recovering bulimic and emotional eater. I am so thankful for the service that goes with this meeting and for the opportunity to learn about that which can help me with this disease, which is, as we have learned, cunning, baffling, powerful, patient, and progressive. And the allergy of the body can be met with abstinence. It can be dealt with abstinence. But the obsession of the mind, it's been my experience, can only be satisfied through a power greater than ourselves. And I cheated and read a little bit ahead, and this guy didn't do so well because he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. So what that tells me is that we must always be striving to enlarge our spiritual life, or this disease will get us. Some time ago, I heard someone share that you are either moving towards God or away from God. And for me, when I move away from God, that means that I move towards the food. And I know that when I take my relationship with my higher power for granted, and I take my blessings for granted, and I forget to say my prayers and meditations, when I forget my gratitude towards God's blessings, when I get comfortable and complacent, that's when I start craving substances to soothe my yearning heart and soul. Because when I don't feed my heart and soul with God, I start to miss something. And if I'm on automatic and not connected to him, then I'll go to my go-to thing, which has all my life been food. So I just know that I need to stay in connection with my God, because he's my source, my portion, my healer, my comforter. And I love fellowship. God's skin is on. It's amazing. But at the end of the day, people are people, and God is God. So, and this disease is, in just looking back, I was reading something that really speaks to me, and that the problem is in the mind. And it's in the mind, and it comes from our thinking. And if we stay focused thinking on the truth, I will pass. Thank you for listening.
And thank you, Irene B. Okay, before we take Hannah, just a reminder, we are on page 35, the second paragraph that starts with our first example is a friend. We're commenting on that one paragraph only. And after Hannah, I'll be taking some more names. So go ahead, Hannah.
Hi, this is Hannah, compulsive overeater from Pennsylvania. Thank you, everyone, for your shares. It's really, really wonderful to be on the line here this morning. So I really could resonate with Jim, and just his, you know, having that life, that family on the outside, looking like I have every single thing together on that facade that I put up, but in reality, inside myself, I was so unhappy and just miserable because the food ran my life. And that's all I cared about, how I could get the next fix. You know, nothing else really mattered, and I'm glad that's changed because of recovery. And I could also really resonate with that nervous disposition. For me, that kind of happens when I don't do my morning meditation and I'm not connected with God. I just get nervous for no reason. And, you know, just keeping that spiritual connection and the food, like not having the food, it just made me jittery. And it's like, how do I deal with my life any other way? And we all have this God-shaped hole. I choose to call my higher power God, but I used to fill that with food. And now I fill that with a spiritual connection with my higher power and service. And, you know, in recovery now, my life isn't all about Hannah. It's about God's kids and how I could better be useful to him. And for me, that is something valuable that I've learned. And this disease is composed of two parts, the mental obsession and a physical allergy. The mental obsession is the biggest part. My thinking is absolutely insane, and for me, it helps if I write down my thoughts and I talk to other fellows just to clear up anything in my head and know that that's not reality. You know, I don't have to let my thinking run my life because that's not the way to live. There's a bunch of other things in this world that I could do, and that I could let my head even, like, you know, listen to. I need to put on a different tape in my mind, not the crazy thinking, you know, all over the place tape, the serene, the peaceful tape, you know, that has God in it. And that's how I'm going to keep that state of serenity that I have in this program. And I've only been given that through working these 12 steps and through having a higher power. And to be honest with you, the journey hasn't been easy, but I would not have any other way. So thank you, everyone, for sharing. And I pass.
And thank you, Hannah L. All right, we are on page 35, the second paragraph. Our first example is a friend. We're sharing on that one paragraph. And who else would like to comment on this paragraph?
Patty
Beatrice
G.
O.
Deborah G. Donna W.
Sandy W.
Beatrice O.
Okay, I got you, Beatrice.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else?
H.
Robin H. Let's stop there. So I have Patty T, Beatrice O, Deborah G, Donna W, Sandy W, and Robin H. So if everyone but Patty T could mute their phones, please. Go ahead, Patty.
Good morning, everybody. This is Patty T in Southern California, recovered today by the grace of God. And, you know, I love this paragraph because it really talks about the outside and the inside. You know, if somebody looked at me on paper, I look pretty good. But boy, oh boy, he is an intelligent man, normal so far as we can see, except for nervous disposition. And, you know, my entire life, I know since the time I was a tiny child, my disposition was, my life was run by anxiety. I run on a very low anxiety current at all times. And, I can remember in my childhood, if I wasn't eating compulsively, I was chewing my nails to the point that they would bleed. I literally would eat my cuticles, you know, and tear at them because of that anxiety. And, you know, I can remember in the months before I got abstinent a little over a year ago, before I came back to this fellowship, of wishing, of praying, actually, that I could go to an asylum. I just didn't, I was so in the food. And there is no God for me when there's food. There is no God when I'm in the food. Food is my God. It is the thing. And I kept thinking, if I could just get to an asylum, to a hospital, they could do it for me. They could do it for me. And for whatever reason, that wasn't God's will. God decided that I needed to do it for myself and through him. And so I managed to ask for help from God. I got abstinent. 2 weeks later, I got on this phone meeting. And now I'm discovering this whole thing about the thinking that in 12 years in Overeaters Anonymous, before I came to this fellowship, I had refuted. I'd never really believed it was my thinking. I just thought I just couldn't control my food. The fact of the matter is, I can't control my thinking, my fear, all those character defects set up in me some kind of anxiety that I, in and of myself, can't control. But today, I have a higher power. And the other thing is that I have all of you to listen to and encourage me. And I am so grateful. Thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Patty T. Beatrice O, you're up next, followed by Deborah G. Star one to unmute, Beatrice. Beatrice, we are not hearing you. So I'm going to come back to you. Deborah G, can you go ahead, please?
Hi. I'm Deborah G, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for your service, and thank you for all the shares. And, wow, it's just really, I'm so grateful for all the shares to work on my thinking. And I love what was shared about the thinking, because my thinking is what causes that insanity that he's talking about. And I thought I had everything together and everything looked okay. Maybe it did to the outside world. You know, I had a job and had, you know, financial okay, emotional nature, I don't know. But, you know, when I look at the unmanageability and the devilments in the big book, I can relate to all those things. Trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control my emotional nature. Now, maybe outside it looked like I could, but I truly feel that I couldn't. You know, prey to misery and depression, couldn't make a living. You know, I was making a living, but I felt I couldn't. You know, there's that thinking, feeling of uselessness, full of fear, unhappy, couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. You know, all those things were going on inside, but outside had somewhat of a look of looking good. And then the thinking with all of it and what I was doing with my food, you know, I was in that place of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, because I would surrender and then I would go back to the food. I'd surrender. I was stuck in that mental obsession thinking and couldn't get out. And it only got worse and worse. And the more that it got worse, the more insanity that I felt that he was talking about. And I, you know, I wish I could have checked in, you know, with insanity to someplace. But I didn't know, you know, other than this, this is the place I need to check into, you know, not the asylum. And I didn't know that. That's the twisted thinking. I was just thinking, that's the twisted thinking. I'm thinking I have to check into, you know, the state hospital or whatever place that treats insanity. I come here to have the insanity treated. I get restored in those areas in my life get restored. And not just the outside world, but my inside world gets restored. And, yeah, I had two situations where I had gone back to the food, and I'm surrendering and coming back to really doing what I need to be doing, and that's dealing with obsession of my mind. And I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you.
And thank you, Deborah G. Beatrice O., are you back?
Yes, I'm back. Can I be heard?
Okay. Yes, you can. Go ahead, Beatrice.
Okay, well, thank you. So I really like this paragraph, especially the part where he says, I was an intelligent man, normal so far as we can see, except for this nervous disposition. So I think that I've always had a problem. Well, I know I've always had a problem. Maybe I was born as a food addict, and it was genetic. But I think I spent
We lost you again, Beatrice. Okay, I think you're having some technical difficulties today. So, Donna W., do you want to go ahead, please?
Hi, Donna W. here, calling in from Palo Alto, California. I'm so grateful to be abstinent and in recovery today. And, you know, when I read about Jim, I think about someone, I see someone who doesn't, who's not in touch with their feelings. And, you know, most of my life I ate because I didn't want to feel. It was my, you know, I read a story once about someone addicted to painkillers. I was like, oh my God, what a life to live, to be addicted to painkillers. And then I realized, well, that's what I'm doing with food. That's my painkiller. Just numb me out. And, you know, there's a saying, like, when you put the food down, you feel better. You feel anxious. You feel your anxiety better, your anger better. And one thing I learned is that I'm an anxious person, and my anxiety often feels like I'm hungry. So I just thought I was hungry, you know, but when I put the food down, I started to learn that I was anxious. And so Jim's quote, fine, everything's fine. And I used to think I was fine. And I was horrified when I was seeing a therapist, and she suggested I come to OA. And I was like, me in a 12-step program? I thought that was for people who were, as I heard in a meeting this weekend, I thought that was for people who were in the gutter, you know. I was like horrified that I would be associated with you kinds of people. But, you know, little did I know that it was going to help me not just put the food down, but to help me feel my feelings. And like yesterday, you know, I was having a conversation about finances and taxes with my husband. Oh, my God, you know, good times is that. It was very stressful for me. I was feeling disturbed. It's like, oh, yeah, I get to do a 10th step. I'm feeling disturbed. So I still get to have emotions, but I've got some tools now. I don't have to do them alone, and I get to, you know, acknowledge what's happening and acknowledge my part and then move on and not eat over it. So I'm grateful that I have tools. I'm not alone. I'm very self-reliant, and that's where I go when I'm stressed. So I'm really doing my best to check in with my higher power,
throughout the day, and I notice more and more when I need to make decisions. You know, should I wear this or this? Hey, God, what do you want me to wear today? Should I eat this or that? Should I go here or there? I'm starting to check in with my higher power more. Like, it's not all up to me. I need a higher power to guide me. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna W. Okay, Beatrice O. Third time's the charm, maybe. Okay, guess not. Okay, Sandy W., you're up next, followed by Robin H. Go ahead, Sandy.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen. Thanks again for your service. This is Sandy W., gratefully recovered in Connecticut. And I'm just reminded by this paragraph that our disease, you know, it's not selective, it doesn't discriminate, you know, and maybe most importantly, it's not just active when we're down and out, but also when we seem to have it all. You know, I spent so much time and money trying to figure out why I ate, thinking that if I could just answer that one question, I'd figure out the solution to my problem. But, you know, as this book so wisely points out, self-knowledge truly got me nowhere. Because just like Jim, you know, I ate when life was good. You know, I ate when it wasn't so good. I ate after I married my Prince Charming, and I ate when he turned out to be a frog sometimes because he was human. You know, I ate because I'm a compulsive overeater, and I had the problem all wrong. You know, I thought food was the problem. But because of this book, I came to understand that I used food as my solution. I was the problem. The problem was I didn't know how to live life or how to handle my emotions. And somehow, somewhere along the line, I got a sense of ease and comfort from food in a world that felt anything but easy and very uncomfortable to me. You know, while I guess luckily was never committed, at least to an asylum, I certainly sought out the help of therapists and health coaches and food addiction programs until finally one recommended OA, and eventually I came into contact with this healthy meeting. And by studying this textbook, I started to understand what the real solution was to that problem of me. You know, by figuring out first what I needed to eat in order to be entirely abstinent, and then working the steps, you know, that's what led me to God, as I call my higher power, and another commitment. But this was a life committed to following His will. Such a better place than the commitment to the asylum that this paragraph talks about. And I just hope and pray that commitment is always a part of my life. So thanks all for being here and sharing your recovery with me. And on that, I'll pass. Thanks again, Kathleen.
And thank you, Sandy W. Okay, Robin H., go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm really glad to be here, and thank you all for your service, Kathleen, and for all the shares. Yeah, the things in this paragraph that really stand out for me is, you know, our first example is a friend we call Jim, and then the last sentence, on leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. For such a long time, I thought that I was alone and that no one could understand my pain and my struggles. You know, and the things I'm hearing today are like this sense of shame. Yeah, I felt ashamed. I was so ashamed, excuse me, of my disease and all of my behaviors and sat with this belief, well, this thought that I was alone and that I had no friends and that nobody would like me and that nobody could tolerate being around me. You know, and it's not like I didn't hear words of loving kindness from other people around me and from family. And it's not that I didn't hear others sort of directing and trying to guide me to any 12-step program. All the messages were there, and I couldn't hear them because all I heard were my thoughts about myself, and then they became beliefs because I was totally attached to all of that. There's something wrong with me. I am never going to be able to do this. I am wrong. I am flawed. I am and all of those things meant to me just wrong and unworthy. And so I became unworthy of, you know, of love and of support. And so I sat alone by myself, and as I heard today, you know, in my own created asylum, just myself and the food and my behaviors, and having and not allowing myself, and like the my connection with the food just didn't allow me any to have any connection with my feelings, therefore with me. And about 3 weeks ago, I can't even say what happened, but you know, I don't know. I heard my higher power, and that relationship with my higher power has become strong, is becoming stronger and stronger as I accept, hear, and respect it. And I think what's happening is I'm becoming a friend to myself. You know, I look at it like kind of like, well, if I wasn't being a friend to myself before, how could I think anybody else would want to be a friend to me? But I didn't. Thank you. And I'll just finish up saying I now can hear, see, and feel the love and kindness of my higher power and of all and all of you in program. And for that, I'm very grateful. And I pass.
And thank you, Robin H. Okay, we have time for one more share. Would someone else like to get in this last share?
Betsy QK.
Okay, go ahead, Betsy.
Thank you. Hi, this is Betsy QK, a recovered bulimic compulsive overeater in Colorado. And I was in treatment twice, which felt like a lockup situation. It was, in a way. And it was scary to just have to be there and commit to getting better and doing what somebody else said. That's what was, you know, good and bad about it. But then when it was time to leave, I was afraid too, because I didn't really have a connection that I trusted in yet with a higher power. So the disease was still calling my name, and I was still thinking, you know, in the back of my mind, sorry, I'm passing a dog with dogs. still thinking in the back of my mind about, you know, music and what I could get away with, even though it wasn't a conscious thought. I realize that now. So I'm really grateful that I have a strong connection with my higher power now. And, you know, it has evolved over time, where I don't believe that anything less than God's goodness for me, that God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free, which means being free from the food, free from my defects, free from the old ways of thinking that keep me trapped, and the old ways of reacting. And that's really a blessing to know that no matter what I do, even if I'm imperfect in behavior and in patterns, that God still loves me and is still calling me to do God's will. And I think that's just also part of human nature. And that's how I grow, too. I'm in pain. I let go. And I'm grateful that now letting go comes a little easier than it did in the past. And that going back to, you know, my bulimic ways and what I did with food, that's not an option anymore. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Betsy QK. And we have a minute. Does anyone want to take a minute? No. Okay. Well, we're close enough to the end, so we will end. So I want to thank everyone who shared this morning. Great shares. Really appreciate all of you for participating. And a special thanks to Team Monday, Denise H., Teresa S., Leslie M., Carrie S., and Sandy W., Ramona A., and Reggie O. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, Carrie S., would you please read A Vision for You?
Thank you, Kathleen. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great things will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.